Ricky McCormick lived on the fringes of the seedy parts of St. Louis. Even his own family said he was a little slow. But when Ricky was found dead in a field, there were two notes in his pocket that were coded ciphers. To this day, the brightest minds in cryptography have never solved those ciphers, and no one has ever figured out what happened to Ricky McCormick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Weird World Podcast. My name's Carrie.
I'm Dean.
And
we are going to do the story of the Ricky McCormick and his strange, mysterious death, and the even stranger things that was found on his body after he died. You may have heard about this case before, because you may have heard about this case even on our show. This is one of the first ones that we did many years ago. We're going to redo some of the better ones from that, because two things. One, they were a long time ago. Some systems don't even have them available, because right. There are many hundreds of episodes ago. And because we were just figuring things out. Our sound wasn't very good.
We didn't have good equipment.
We did not have good equipment. Yeah. So we thought we'd redo some of those of the better ones. And this, I think, is one of the better ones.
We'll see what you guys think.
Well, okay, yeah. What is maybe the most mysterious cipher in the world, at least out there in the internet, the interwebs? You've heard of the Voynich manuscript. We've talked about that on the show.
The zodiac letters.
The two remaining cryptograms. Cryptograms? Is that a word for things?
I don't know either.
From the Zodiac Killer, for sure. The note that was found in a book that was related to the disappearance. Well, that's related to the death of the Somerton Man in Australia. That's a very mysterious cipher. Or maybe it's the note that was found on the body of Ricky McCormick, someone you may never have heard of, and you for sure would never have heard of without those two notes being involved in his mysterious death.
Well, and I was going to say, this isn't a famous one either.
It's pretty well known in the annals of the unknown. Those of us who are aficionados of mysteries have heard about this case. Now, this we'll talk about in a minute. This thing has generated incredible response. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people have taken a shot at this. So it's maybe more well-known than you think, Carrie. Huh. Sorry. So let's start with Ricky, of course. Ricky McCormick was born on June 14th, 1958 in St. Louis, Missouri. Even at a really young age, his family knew he was kind of troubled. Ricky had demons. He would sometimes spend, like, recess just standing by himself, staring off into space. Most of the people in the school thought he was weird. They said he was strange. He would tell them weird stories that made no sense.
Demons, Dean? I'm not
too literary.
Sure, I like your characterization.
Well, his aunt.
Poor little Ricky.
He was a kid. His aunt Gloria Cookie McCormick. She told how a psychiatrist, quote, said Ricky had a brick wall in his mind. He the psychiatrist, said Ricky refused to break that wall.
I mean, who knows what his diagnosis would be
for
today.
Sure. So the rest of that quote, though, he didn't like the life of living poor, and he had an active imagination.
Oh,
that's what, end quote. That's what his aunt said. His own mother, though, used a different word for Ricky, a not very nice word that starts with R.
Ugh, yeah. Don't like her.
Yeah. Ricky dropped out of high school, and even after going through high school, he was really barely able to read and write. It's questionable whether he was literate at all. And so instead of struggling to spell words, he would sometimes just sort of scribble on paper as if fake writing words, because he really couldn't spell it very well. One cousin of his said he talked, quote, like he was from another world. So it's more than just he was a little odd. He was more than a little off. No question, today he'd be diagnosed for sure as having some kind of mental illness, schizophrenia, whatever. I don't know. But his childhood was in the 1960s into the 70s. Yeah. He was born in 58.
I mean, he could just be on the spectrum.
Yeah. He could have been, but like I said, he was barely literate. He was kind of barely able. He lived mostly with his mom because he was in his 40s.
He didn't have the proper support.
Ricky lived most of the time with his elderly mother. Sometimes he lived on his own. He had not just these mental problems, though. He had serious health issues as well. His lungs and his heart had serious problems. He had long had these ailments. He was always kind of a sickly kid, too, in addition to being, you know, maybe on the spectrum or worse.
Yeah.
So as an adult after high school, he fell into these kind of menial jobs to get enough money to get by. He would work like graveyard shifts at places that were hard to hire for and things like that. He also got disability checks from his heart ailments from the state. And that augmented the little money he made from working. And like I said, he was able to get by, again, mostly living with his mom until, mm-hmm. you know, well into adulthood.
Where was this?
St. Louis area. Okay. St. Louis, Missouri.
Gotcha.
Ricky didn't get into a lot of trouble until he did. In 1992, he was 34 years old. He had fathered two children with a girl
Ooh.
Who was not quite 14 years old.
Oh, goodness, Ricky.
Yeah. She was a bit of a mystery also. The family only knew her as Pretty Baby. They had no name for her. It's just, that's Ricky's girlfriend, Pretty Baby. She's a teen, and she had two children by him. So this was discovered. The state went after him. Even the prosecution had acknowledged that Ricky had serious, you know, the prosecutor used something like the word mental defect or something like that. So they knew he was not, you know, completely, he was not mentally healthy, but didn't matter. They still charged him with statutory rape. And they convicted him. He served just, some sources say about 11 months, some say about 13 months, but he served so a year-ish of a three-year sentence at Farmington Correctional Institute in Missouri, and then he got out of prison. And his life just, it didn't get any better. By 1999, he was 41 years old. He had fathered four children out of wedlock. He had never been married.
Yeah.
He still lived mostly with his mom, and he would just hold jobs off and on here and again. Most of the time, he spent hanging out with some pretty shady characters, including drug dealers, at a downtown St. Louis Amoco gas station. And then he would often work like the graveyard shift at the gas station, getting some shifts here and there. He augmented this with running drugs.
Yeah.
They would send him off to take drugs to customers. Mm-hmm. And so he picked up money that way. He was more or less supporting himself when he wasn't living with his mom, but... You know, this was Ricky's existence here. Then Ricky disappeared. His family couldn't find him. His friends had no idea what had become of him. It's not even clear that they really knew he was missing, because when he lived on his own,
he wasn't always in contact
with family, and he didn't have friends so much as people who, you know,
took advantage of him.
Yes, exactly. Having him run drugs and things like that for him. And he was adult. So, you know, it's not like there's going to be an APB out for him, but he was a little bit dependent on others, and he was not absolutely fully capable of taking care of himself. And he had these serious issues that would go to see doctors pretty regularly, too, as well, his health issues, his heart and lung issues. He had no car. He didn't have a lot of money. What could have happened to him? Where could he have gone?
He didn't just take a trip.
No. Unlikely.
Yeah.
So no one knew where he was. 3 days passed. Still no sign of Ricky. Then there's a sign of Ricky. His body was discovered on June 30th, 1999, in an abandoned cornfield in St. Louis County, Missouri, along Route 367, something like 15 or 20 miles or so from his current home. So he had no car.
How'd he get that far?
There was no bus or any kind of public transportation that went out to that area. It was a pretty rural area at that time. It had been 3 days in June in the middle of the U.S., very hot, very humid. So his body was pretty badly decomposed, and they really couldn't even get fingerprints off of his body. His fingerprints had sort of decomposed and fallen away.
Yeah.
And no one had reported him missing, so it wasn't immediately clear who he was, but they eventually identified him. And so they tracked him down. They say, okay, he's last seen alive 3 days ago before his body was found. He was last seen with this gas station in Amoco, which the police were aware of because he knew drugs were run out of there. And the people who, let's just say this, the gas station was not a very savory place. And the two guys who owned and ran that gas station were very unsavory guys. And we'll meet them a little later in the story.
Okay.
The immediate issue, though, was how did Ricky die?
Yeah.
What happened to him? Here's the thing. There's no obvious wounds on his body. There's no sign of a gunshot. There's no sign of stab wounds. His head, though, I guess his face and his head, I guess the flesh on his head was so decomposed that they couldn't be sure that there hadn't been some kind of a head wound. Presumably, though, a gunshot wound would have left a fracture in the skull, so there wasn't that.
Yeah.
And presumably, they didn't find fractures in the skull, because the skull's not going to decompose, just the flesh did.
Right.
But they didn't know if something had happened. There was some kind of a head wound that didn't register as a, you know, significant injury in the skull.
If your head is hit so hard it kills you, wouldn't there be some sort of...
You would think.
I don't know what to think about that.
I would think so. I would think usually skull fractures are, or you know, if a blunt instrument would leave radiated fracture cracks around the impact. And so I don't see how they couldn't have. The coroners did. They did an autopsy, and they, so they didn't find gunshot wounds. It was not clear how he died. Natural cause. I mean, it's not impossible.
Right.
He could have been strangled, and maybe the, you know, but you usually you talk about the hyoid bone is broken there. Not all the time. They could have been suffocated. Who knows? But
that's true.
His body was dumped, though. He didn't go there. He didn't get there on his own. So that's unusual. So the police, though, at least at first, weren't even sure it was murder, but they did think of his death as suspicious.
Yeah.
They looked into it a little bit, and they realized, or they found out, that that cornfield, there, he was not the first body found there. This was kind of a place that in St. Louis area, I guess there had been dumped bodies in this cornfield before. So you have a body dumped in a cornfield where bodies are dumped.
It's where America gets its corn from.
Yes, extra protein. 15 miles or at least from the home of the victim, who has absolutely no way to have gotten there. So eventually it seems the police did settle on, it's more than suspicious. We're pretty sure this was a murder case. Probably maybe has something to do with the drug world that he was involved in. But they had no motive. They had no obvious cause of death. It was again, they still weren't completely sure it was a murder. So there was not much they could do, or at least not much they did. Quote, it's kind of a puzzling case. This was the Captain David Tiefenbrun. He was the Bureau Commander of Criminal Investigations for the St. Charles County Police Department. That's who was investigating. This was not in the city of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Quote, if I was to rely on my police instincts, there probably is some foul play. We just haven't been able to prove it, end quote.
Yeah.
So they had no leads, yet no suspects, at least with any evidence leading to them. And they, again, not certain it was murder.
This was June 1999?
Yeah.
What had just happened in America a couple months earlier?
I don't know. Are you actually like asking the legit question?
No. Okay. Well, I know what had just happened.
Because that's a weird question.
Which
by the
was
way, if you
probably
were.
Consuming the news into June.
What was it?
Columbine.
Columbine. Weird that you would know a fairly specific date for that.
Well, because I know what I was doing at that time.
You
which
do.
Was very
you know what you were doing at Columbine.
Noteworthy. Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you what year that was. Interesting.
1999.
I know that now because you just told me that. But if you had just asked me.
I had just had a baby. That's how I know.
Sure. Babies and school shootings are somehow.
Oh my God. 100%.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, interesting. A little view into Carrie's mind there just now. Well, that was intriguing.
I didn't hear anything on the news about Ricky McCormick, and that's probably why.
No one did outside of St. Louis. So it wasn't a big case at the time. It wasn't tense at all.
And you know what's so weird about this?
What?
In my mind, the Ricky McCormick story happened 50 years earlier.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It just doesn't. Yeah.
In 1949?
I am shocked that it was. In 1999 now.
Oh, that's weird.
Even having heard this story.
I suppose.
It just seems so old-timey to me.
It's not, though, because the reason he's famous is the internet. So case kind of stagnated and it went cold. And the case, it's still open to this day. The murder of Ricky McCormick is unsolved to this day.
Yeah.
But like I said, it got a little bit of local attention, not much. It quickly went cold. Nothing, you know, no big deal. No one's heard of it. That's not the weird part of this story at all. The weird part is what they found on Ricky's body. And the weirder part is that what they found on Ricky's body wasn't exposed to the public for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Was it in 2011 when suddenly the FBI on their website told the story of Ricky McCormick and asked for help? The reason that what they're asking for help was that the police, right away, they checked his body and they found these two notes stuffed in his pockets. And on these two pages of notes that were, again, apparently we have no reason to think weren't written by Ricky, were these two kind of notes written entirely in code. During that entire 12 years, the FBI and all their cypher experts had never been able to have any clue what those two cipher notes that were found on Ricky's body.
I'm assuming
meant.
They showed these to his mother and Aunt Cookie at the time.
They did, but they otherwise kept it secret from the public.
But what I'm saying is they they could identify it as his writing? They knew it was his writing?
I think so. I think they said that looks like Ricky's writing. But so the St. Charles County Police sent these two notes to the FBI almost immediately. And again, kept them secret from the wider public. So the FBI comes out in 2011 and says, look, there was this murder case 12 years ago. There's these two cipher notes found on the body of the victim. We've tried everything we can do. We, the FBI, and this a group we'll talk about in a second, that actually their job is to break codes.
Yeah.
We can't decipher this. Would you please help? The internet lost its shit.
I'll bet.
As you would expect. Reddit people. Oh my God. This just blew up. There was an episode of it on Unsolved Mysteries, the original Unsolved Mysteries program. 7,000 comments flooded into the FBI. So much activity. They had to actually start a special Ricky McCormick code page.
Wow.
On a separate part of their website. The notes were part undecipherable text, kind of like the Beale code or the Voynich manuscript, like they couldn't be sure what they were. And they're part unbreakable code written in identifiable, you know, letters, kind of like, again, the Tamman Shrewd Somerton Man case or to the Zodiac Killer case. But the FBI was completely stumped. It's kind of just a jumble of letters and numbers. And we'll show you pictures on our website. We'll have links to the actual notes. We have photographs of the notes. They've been released, of course. There's no obvious breaks in these notes, just to get a mix of letters and numbers.
You mean breaks for like words?
Yeah, breaks. There's nothing. There's a long string, so which leads cipher experts to think that, okay, some kind of a symbol is being used to indicate breaks between words,
yeah,
or you know, even potentially punctuation or something like that. Some portions do have parentheses around them, and some sections of the words were circled. It looks, to the FBI, it clearly was a code, so they went about trying to break it. So there are four steps to breaking a code. Give a little code sidebar here. One, you figure out the language. That was easy. This was done in English. Sometimes it's not obvious what the language is right away. So first of all, you have to figure out what language this is. The FBI was able to figure that out right away. Number two, the second step in code breaking, you figure out what kind of cipher was used, like letters transposed or different letters stand for other letters or something like that, or the numbers mean letters or some kind of a substitution cipher, something like that. That's considered sort of step two in trying to break a code. Step three, you reconstruct the key that defines the cipher. That is how the letters were shifted or changed, what the key is, such as pages, or maybe it's lines in a book. It was like a one-time key thing where that spies might use, where you throw it away. That's virtually undecipherable. But you try to figure out, okay, what's the key? What's going to be the trick that lets us figure out what this is? And the fourth step is you apply the reconstruction to the code and translate. So you figure out the language, figure out what's the method of that particular cipher, figure out what the key is to that particular cipher, and then you apply that key back to the cipher and you translate it. That's the steps you take in breaking a code. The FBI could not get past step two. They knew it was in English, and they figured out it was what kind of a method of a cipher it was. That's it. Only 1% of FBI codes that they attempt to crack are uncracked and remain unsolved. So they have a 99% solution rate they could not solve. Ricky McCormick's cipher. And the thing is, they're pretty sure it was a cipher. A lot of people said, well, maybe it's not. Maybe, like, my personal opinion, my theory of the Voynich manuscript is the Voynich manuscript is not a cipher. It's gibberish. It's fake symbols that don't mean anything and never will.
See, but, and this, just because of how you describe Ricky McCormick, it could be his own weird shorthand.
You would totally think that. For the FBI, though. And the FBI's not looking for something to be baffled by. You would think if they thought that was true, they'd say, okay, yeah, no, we're done with this case because, we can't solve it, but we can't solve it because it's gibberish. No. Quote, it doesn't happen often that we have an unsolved cipher of this length and significance. Dan Olson told this, he said this to local newspapers at the time. He was in charge of the CRRU, which stands for the Cryptanalysis and Racketeering Records Unit. It was, I believe, part of the FBI. Quote, the characters are not random. There are many E's, for example, that could be used as a spacer. There are many characteristics that suggest it could be solved, many patterns. The problem is we don't know why it is not solvable. So they were convinced this thing is a code. This is not gibberish. Their reading of it, the way it made them think, yeah, that totally reads like a cipher.
Yeah. You know what else there's a lot of?
What?
X's.
X's?
Yeah. Hmm.
You think that would be... Uh-huh. Unless you and I solve it right now real quick.
I think
yes,
we could.
People have tried for years and years to do it. But...
And there's this one little section, like you said, there's things in parentheses. Mm-hmm. These are centered on the page. Mm-hmm. So there's like four lines that are much shorter than the rest of the
Less
text.
Less wide than
Correct.
The rest of the text.
Okay. Less wide.
Narrower.
And like three of them, there's just letters, a bunch of letters, mm-hmm. and then O-N-D-E 71, mm-hmm. N-C-B-E. The
yeah.
next one, bunch of letters, O-N-S. Something E 74 NCBE.
Yeah, I'm gonna read out.
Oh, okay. It's like a list, and then there's numbers.
Yeah, there's some theories about that.
Yeah, that part is like
it's very
concentrate
weird.
On that. I mean,
yeah,
try to figure that part out.
Hey, FBI, Carrie is basically just did you a solid. All right, do what she said, and you'll figure
yeah.
it out.
Yeah,
thank you, Carrie. You know what? I'm gonna thank you for the FBI.
Okay, and I see an apostrophe. Uses an apostrophe.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. So he does that. That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. The even bigger mystery, of course, was Ricky was not, let's be nice, cryptography smart.
Yeah.
His family, again, says that they never knew Ricky to write any kind of a code whatsoever. He sometimes would doodle these letters, and he called it writing. His mother said, quote, the only thing he could write was his name. He didn't write in no code, end quote. His father said, quote, Ricky couldn't spell anything, just scribble, end quote. So, again, he was basically illiterate. They didn't make, it didn't make sense to them. They had never heard of any kind of notes, any kind of code that and he had written. And by the way, when they showed it to him, and they said, we've never seen him write that kind of a thing. As far as I can tell, though, no one seems to acknowledge that someone else wrote it. Everybody seems to acknowledge that he wrote it. That I've never, you know, that tells me that the family acknowledged, okay, that looks like Ricky's writing.
Right.
But we've never seen him write like that. And we certainly have never, didn't have any idea he was into cryptography.
See, if he couldn't read and write,
yeah.
If he couldn't write real words,
yeah.
How could he do a code?
I know.
Any kind of.
That's part of the mystery.
Yeah, he couldn't.
No.
Unless he copied it from something.
Copy of R was taking dictation.
Yeah.
R was maybe a little more literate than they thought he was and had self-educated this last 20 years.
You never know.
So there's tons and tons and tons of theories of what happened.
Yeah.
Especially, and it tends, honestly, weirdly enough, to center on what does this code mean as opposed to who murdered Ricky McCormick.
Yeah.
The writings are just a lot of capital letters and some numbers. Do you see any lowercase? So they look like they're all uppercase letters to you?
They're all uppercase, yeah.
Many have... People who have looked at it have seen possible patterns and have thought they have noticed a pattern. For instance, the numbers 71, 74, and 75 right. are repeated.
With the same four letters after them.
The sequence NCBE,
yeah.
again, all caps, that's also repeated multiple times
yeah.
in the ciphers. One theory is that it's in reference to highways, to local freeways, highways
oh,
in
okay.
that part of Missouri. Some say the numbers refer to car parts, are VIN numbers, which are coded numbers on vehicles here in the U.S. Some of the numbers seem to fit that style of being a VIN number, V-I-N, a VIN number. Of course, the obvious question is why? So you have what
yeah.
car VIN numbers and highways, like Highway 74, Highway 74. What does that mean?
I mean, they don't look like any VINs that I've ever seen.
Yeah. It seems weird. Some
yeah.
people said, oh, was it some kind of elaborate way to track cars or track cars on highways? Maybe, you know, like a car stealing ring that he was part of or was working with or something like that. If so, there's no evidence that he's involved in any car stealing ring or something like that. And why would you do that in such an intricate code?
Yeah.
And why would you have Ricky do that?
Yeah.
And again, unless he was literally writing these things down for him, for
yeah.
someone else at the dictation. Hey, write down NCBE 74, you know, something like that. Seems pretty weird that you would choose him to do that.
Yeah.
Or maybe his semi-literacy is what, you know, made them think he can do it because he can't ever know, he won't know what this means because he's just writing down what is more or less gibberish
yeah.
to him. I think he knew his letters. So he had learned his letters. He couldn't write very well or read that well. Some see it as gambling notation, some kind of shorthand gambling. Gambling notes are often in cipher. That's for obvious reasons. So they thought, okay, is this gambling? Was Ricky involved in gambling? Again, though, the police looked into that angle. There was no known association to illegal gambling in Ricky's life or the people Ricky hung out with. So as far as anyone knows, they haven't been able to trace this and say this is some kind of a gambling notation.
Yeah.
Ricky did have those medical problems, right? Mm-hmm. And he did maybe keep a medical diary. So some people think this is his self-medical diary that he kept about his health to keep track of his meds. He was on different medications. So people think that the supposed medical code is ALPNTE-GLSE-SE-ERTE. And they think that means A, late night Phenergan, taken in evening G, late night Serenace / Seroquel, extended release taken evening, end quote. In other words, it's like the first letter of those words. And he's just writing the letters. They have this A in there because there's an A, A-L-P-N. T-E becomes A, colon, late night Phenergan taken in evening. And then they have a G there, so they have to say just the letter G. In evening G?
Good. Felt good.
What does that mean? There's another code, a sequence of it, that's CDN-SEPRSEQNSF/DE7-4NCBE. And those were in parentheses. That's supposedly, to these people who think it's a medical diary, means, quote, chronic depression in September. Really severe episode on the start of December in 1974. No cause before episode, end quote. I mean,
no.
What do you do with that? That's, you know, is he really going to write something that means to him chronic depression in December? Really severe episode on the start. Again, the on the start has to be there because there's an O. They have to explain that O. I believe it was an, I actually don't see an O there. Really severe episode on the start. I don't know. In December 1974, DE74, and then NCBE is no cause before episode is in this, you know, cracking of the code. You know,
it just doesn't sound with somebody like somebody of his intellectual capabilities is going to use those words. Before episode.
Capital letters to stand for words. I get that. I can see that. That's an easy code for people. I know what those things mean. I do that. I used to take notes and I would make up kind of my own in college, something like that. I'd make up things that made sense to me. Yeah. Everybody does that. And you might not know what they mean, but that's a lot in a sequence. That two things. One, really, you're going to remember all that entire sentence? And B, why would you have to write that much detail of that? And C, like you said, those aren't words that he would probably use. There's another one. FLRSEPRSEONCE71NCBE. That says, that equals to these folks, from late September, really severe episode on December 1971, no cause before episode. And also last one, 26MLSE74 means 2x, 6 milligrams, Serenace in 1974. So you're going to note that in the year 1974, you twice took 6 milligrams of Serenace. That makes no sense whatsoever. So it's sort of numerology in my mind.
But also that line that you just read, the 71, I read it as FLRSEPQSE. ONDE71NCBE.
Okay. So there's some, because it's his writing. So
but it's hard to tell. Yeah. I suppose it could be an R, but it really, I don't know.
Well, as you can see, though, I don't know that this gets you anywhere. You're supposed to.
That seems like a humongous stretch to me.
It does. And it's just that they're finding words that fit the letters and numbers that are there. You're supposed to understand this indecipherably and idiosyncratically coded note to yourself months or even years later?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. You wouldn't do that. And late night has to be one word, not two. because you have an L. You have, so you can't make late night, and they make late night into one word. And you're going to qualify severe episode with really when you're writing in code. Why would you do that? Yeah. Really severe episode. No,
yeah.
Makes no sense. You're not going to, you're going to make it as short as you possibly can. And there seems like there's, to make this work, there's lots of sort of extra words in there.
Yeah.
You're not going to use the word severe episode when also when you, like you said, you have, you know, you have the mental capacity of maybe a fourth or fifth yeah. grader or something like that. And you're not going to write on the start of December instead of just at the start or just December.
Yeah.
You know, why? Again, you're reading this years later. Some of these 1971, 1974. This is 1999.
Yeah.
So this is his medical diary from almost 30 years before. That doesn't make any sense. So there's a lot of holes with this.
Yeah.
I think they just, the on to start of December comes because they have to explain that. Oh, sentence
wait,
over.
Can I say something else?
Yeah.
Below those lines with the 71, 74, and 75.
Yeah.
There's another full line and... separated out with parentheses, it has WLD mm-hmm. and then some weird, oh, it looks like maybe a little N and then WLD again. Hmm. And then the line below that has WLD, it has numbers 194 WLD apostrophe S NCBE again.
That NCBE is
and
pattern.
Then again in parentheses, some letters. Almost looks like a license plate, but it can't be because it's a parentheses instead of a seven. Yeah. But several WLDs
yeah.
together and then the NCBE again. Huh.
Those would be
you gotta
in,
figure
in
out
normal
what...
cryptography, those that means those are common words yes. or common or names that are repeated throughout something uh-huh. like that. But no one knows what they are.
Yeah.
There's other little weird holes too, like Finnegan is just P, but Seracel and Serenance are S E. Because you have an SC there instead of just an S. So they have SC, so they have to say, oh, that's Serenus or Seracel. Why? Yeah. It should be just S. So there's lots of little...
Yeah.
And both are SE? Really? How would you know it was Serenus or Seracel? Because they have him writing SE for both of those yeah. different drugs. And you took the drugs on, quote, evening G? Is that Gedned's day? I don't... That doesn't make any sense. See, why wouldn't you have a date there? You're really years yeah. later... I took those drugs in the evening G, not like a specific day. So
yeah.
there's so many holes in the medical diary.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
It's nonsensical. To me. It's numerology. It's like Bible code or something like that where you just find, you fit your solution to whatever you have, the
yeah.
words or letters that you have. You can find anything you want, but you can always find something to fit. The internet has endless supply of people who think they are smarter than everyone else. And they say, got it, nailed it. No, what is it? No cause before the NCBE. No cause before episode.
Yeah.
Right. That's what people say.
Here's one. I think he bought a Zune. Remember
oh,
your
really?
Zune?
I remember Zune.
Yeah,
was that Microsoft?
Yeah, it was the answer to the iPod.
It was. It failed miserably.
And
I was one of the four people who bought
it. Yeah, he probably bought it for $99.
Actually, you bought that for me for Christmas. So I'm going to blame our birthday or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's on you.
You had more than one, though. $99.84.
Oh, it's a cheap Zune.
And then it says something else. Zune, P-L-S-E. And he does like little N's. So I think that means something.
This is his music. This is his playlist.
Yeah.
We have solved it, Carrie. This whole thing is somehow, we're going to figure out
yeah.
songs that fit these letters.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it. And the numbers, Carrie, release dates. He loved 70s R&B.
Yeah. And then this little section, you know, that he has sectioned off, mm-hmm. you know, with lines. There's more numbers. There's some numbers in the middle of the lines, which yeah. there weren't before. And then there's some numbers at the beginning of the lines.
Yeah, it's a total mix of numbers and letters.
And they're not the same. 36, 35, 651, then 99.84, and then maybe point something. I don't know. It's hard to tell. But it's weird.
Yeah. Well, there's
other
things.
Half somewhere further down. It's weird.
Okay. It is weird. It's endless fun.
I'm going to work on this.
Okay, Carrie. Carrie's going to solve it, you guys. You know what? I should have done this after you solved it. This is a mistake.
Yeah.
We'll have a special episode. Update Carrie has
after
solved
Carrie
the Ricky McCormick code. Carrie, known cryptologist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of these words with crypt are real words, but...
That's what it's going to take.
What?
Somebody who doesn't think the way...
I love it.
Because his mind doesn't work the way...
For sure.
code makers work.
You think a lot like Ricky, is what you're saying. Good for you. You should get some Serenus and Seracal. There's another theory that it could be some kind of a drug note. He was involved in the drug trade. So these were some kind of drug codes and things like that. He kept track of you know, deliveries or something like that. In this world, in this solution, the NCBE acronym is thought by some as like a drug slang.
Yeah.
They think it might mean no cash being exchanged or, or here's my favorite, nose candy buys eight ball. or nickel bag that's every dumb. Day. Nickel bag every day. Come on, that's pretty good. Some said no callback, and they just ignored that pesky E. So lots of people say it's drugs, and those are some of the things they've come up with. Because that doesn't make sense that it could be drug-related. That would make sense, but no cash being exchanged. So you're just giving him the drugs. Okay, all right.
But also, he wasn't the person recording transactions. Probably not. Or...
But he may have thought the words nose candy buys eight ball, which doesn't make any sense.
Not at all.
And of course, nickel bag every day.
That's because here's the thing. He probably doesn't know eight ball starts with an E.
No.
It would be NCB number eight.
It'd be an A. Probably in all likelihood in his world. So probably not. But he was this occasional drug courier. He was a courier, though, too, right? He wasn't an everyday drug dealer. So why would he need to take those?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. You can play that game forever. So I looked up the 1998 St. Louis Rams schedule. Because this was, you know, the football team at the time, and the Rams were still in St. Louis at the time. The Rams lost to the Philadelphia Eagles that year, a few months before Ricky died. So NCBE, it means never can beat Eagles. I mean, why not? So you're left with the one that you kind of started with, the scribble theory.
Yeah.
So some people still do think it was just Ricky jotting down random letters and numbers. They were symbols that maybe meant something in his damaged mind, but they're in fact gibberish. His family said he would, again, he would sometimes kind of write that.
But you said for some reason the FBI doesn't think it's gibberish.
They absolutely don't think it's gibberish. It reads to them and it looks to them and the shape of it and the feel of it to them is that this is a true code.
Yeah.
And it's a cipher. That's why they've asked for help. Ricky's family, though, they believe it is just his gibberish. So the FBI, again, they don't believe this gibberish. They said they saw patterns. Quote, we look at a lot of things that are gibberish, arbitrary strikes in a keyboard. That was Olson, the guy from CRR, you said. He goes, this is not that case. So they're pretty sure Ricky's family, again, maybe they think it's gibberish, but they admit that these things don't look anything like his scribblings that he had done that they had seen. So
the few women that he had children with, did he have relationships with them or were they one night stands or very casual kind
of things? He had two with one with pretty baby.
The first one. Yeah. But so, that was,
I don't know.
I'm just wondering if they had relationships, if they, you know, showed that this to the, you know, either of those, any of those women, you know, if they spent any amount of time with him, maybe they would have some kind of insight. Like, you know, I'm better at reading your writing than you are.
Maybe. There is one more theory that I think is worth noting, and that is that even if it did look like Ricky's writing, maybe it was not Ricky who wrote these cipher notes. The not Ricky theory says that he did not write these codes because he couldn't write these codes. He couldn't really write at all, let alone in a sophisticated cipher. So the people who believe he wasn't capable of writing the notes think that the drug dealers in his orbit wrote those notes, and those are the people who killed him. And some people think maybe the notes were just like sort of a red herring to confuse the police. Like, let's put these things in here. They'll be fixated on these notes and we have nothing to do with those notes. We don't write in this cipher, but they'll think his death had something to do with these notes. So it'll be confusing. It'll be a classic red herring. If that's true, it worked. And yes, I'm just turning 13, obviously.
Did they do anything?
I don't know.
See on how many pages are there? Are there just two pages?
Two pages,
On the second page, it looks like it's from some sort of notepad or something where it says notes at the top.
Yeah.
Did they like search his where he lived to see?
I'm sure they did.
This paper pad.
Oh, I see. I don't know.
Did they trace it to belonging to him?
I don't know that they did. But doesn't prove or disprove anything that they could directly trace it to him.
No, but it's it would be a clue.
It would be a clue, but no, I don't know. Presumably not. So this theory is that he was carrying this sort of drug courier notes, but he didn't write the code. So Ricky had made a drug run to Orlando, Florida, just 2 weeks before he was killed. In fact, he'd made a few runs to Florida. He was apparently doing this for the people who ran the gas station where he worked. The guy who owned the station in the mid-1990s, he killed a neighbor with a butcher knife and then went to prison where he died in prison. After that, the Hamdallah brothers took over that Amoco gas station where Ricky worked when he died. Their names are Juma and Bob, and Juma kind of ran the business. They were, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, they were thugs. Uh-huh. They were Palestinian immigrants, but they were very violent criminals. The police were well aware of them. Bob especially was a vicious criminal. He was involved with local gangs and the local drug trade. Bob had shot a man in the street in 1997, just nine months later, shot a brother of the man. No charges were filed in either case. What the fuck?
Wow.
It makes you wonder if he wasn't a CI.
Yeah.
He beat a homeless man because he was hanging out at their gas station. So he didn't like him hanging out at the gas station. Yeah. He didn't leave. So he took a rusty hammer and beat the homeless man. And 2 weeks later, that homeless man was found shot to death. Again, no charges for Bob Hamdallah. So, I mean, some people think he may have even been involved in murder for hire. He's just a lowlife.
Yeah.
So is his scuzzy brother. Just 2 months before Ricky died, the brothers argued and Juma shot Bob, his brother, but Bob did not press charges against Juma. Then comes Ricky's trip to Orlando. It's June of 1999. I guess it's this early middle June of 1999. He went with his girlfriend. They took a bus. They stayed at an Econo Lodge in the Orlando area. They made a bunch of phone calls, short phone calls, over 2 days in that motel. At least one of those calls was back to the gas station, the Amoco in St. Louis, where he worked, where the Hamdallah brothers owned.
Yeah.
The girlfriend would later say that she suspected the trip was to pick up or drop off some kind of drug, maybe weed. It's like, okay, you suspected that?
Yeah.
I guess she was probably fully aware that's what they're doing, but she didn't want to say that to the police. Yeah. Ricky had done this before, but this time when he got back to St. Louis, he was freaked out. He was not acting the same. He was clearly scared. He went to the hospital and checked himself in. He was there for 2 days. When he got out, he went immediately to his aunt's house where he said he felt safer. He then went back to the emergency room in the hospital and tried to be admitted to it. It's June 25th at about 5 p.m. And he's telling them that he had trouble breathing. They checked him out, but they released him in 50 minutes.
Yeah.
He spent the night in the waiting room after they discharged him. He was scared.
Yeah.
He was trying to stay. My reading of that is that he was trying to stay where people were. He was trying to get himself in the hospital. He felt safer there. He felt they didn't know maybe where his aunt lived. He stayed with his aunt. They probably knew where he lived. They probably knew where his mom lived.
Yeah.
So he's going to places like the hospital and to his aunt's house. The next morning, he talked to his aunt by phone about 11:30 a.m. He said he was on his way to the gas station, for his gas station, to get something to eat. An employee, I know, if he was afraid of those people,
he wouldn't go there.
You wouldn't think he'd go there. So it's not clear. An employee there saw him there the next day, the day after that. He left the gas station, and he apparently was dead later that day because, again, when they found him, he was 3 days decomposed. Yeah. They think he died the day he disappeared. His body, again, was dumped in the cornfield and was found 3 days later. The girlfriend herself, she says she thought Bob Hamdallah had done it. Bob Hamdallah was, again, the brother of the guy who ran the gas station and had been shot by that brother and who was the bigger thug of the two. He was kind of the muscle for a local drug dealer named Greg Knox. And he was associated with, I guess, that drug ring or that drug group. And so you wonder, you know, did that have... So you have this drug dealer, Greg Knox. You have the Hamdallahs who are, you know, involved in the drug gang. You have Bob Hamdallah, who is possibly a hitman, certainly a thug for hire of some sort. They had just, you know... Something that rises to my mind is that they had beaten up and then possibly shot and killed that homeless man. And he hung out at the gas station. did Ricky see something that Ricky maybe shouldn't have seen or something like that? Or did he start talking about that or something like that? Who knows? We don't know. The police looked into this guy, and they did have an informant that said that Greg Knox, was involved in the killing of Ricky. That's the drug dealer who Bob Humdahl worked for.
Yeah.
But they couldn't get anything to stick. Knox would later go to jail on drug charges. Bob Humdahl murdered a customer at the gas station with a Glock 9mm. He shot him in the face after they got into an argument. So, you know, go for Doritos, stay for being murdered. He got a retrial of this case on a technicality, and because like his lawyer didn't call a certain expert, just something that's so despicable that that should get you another trial. And the second jury believed his self-defense plea, and this murderous thug was again freed, this Bob Humdahl character. So these are some shady people. Could these people have written that code and stuffed it in Ricky's pockets? Would they leave it on him? If they knew about it, why would they leave it on him? Or if they had written it maybe 2 days before he went to Florida or something like that, and I don't know, I guess they wouldn't know he still had it on him. I don't know. Again, the FBI thinks it's Ricky's writing. The FBI thinks it's a cipher. And do you really see these low-life, thuggy drug dealers writing in a very sophisticated code?
Yeah.
But if not them, who? Because you don't see Ricky McCormick writing a very sophisticated cipher either. So it's not just the mystery of you can't, you know, solve the ciphers. Like, who could have written it? Ricky doesn't seem like the person who written it, but they think he is.
Yeah.
Again, why was he killed?
Yeah.
And was the cipher this sort of, you know, red herring? But really? If that's the case, then you think it would be sort of gibberish. Let's put a lot of numbers and a lot of letters because it's a red herring. But again, you're so good at this gibberish that the FBI is convinced that it's not gibberish.
Yeah.
That's weird. To this day, no one has cracked the code, not the FBI's cryptanalysis and racketeering records unit. They still list it as one of their most impossible unsolved codes. The American Cryptogram Association, they took a stab at it. Countless amateur cryptographers have tried it. I would consider all have failed.
Yeah.
Plenty on internet have claimed to have broken it. Almost certainly none have. And again, it's been going at it since 2011. So this is now going on 14 years of unsolved by everyone, but almost 26 years of being unsolved by the FBI and experts who had seen it from the get-go. They still have a separate webpage for this on the FBI. So the avalanche of guesses and suggestions for solving the cipher got so annoying that the FBI requested that people not call by phone or use email to contact them. So they said, basically, just use the website. Quote, this story has generated an outpouring of responses. To accommodate the continued interest in this case, we have established a page where the public can offer their comments and theories about the code of messages. We can ignore that webpage because no one solved it. I mean, I'm sure they probably monitor it. I imagine they do, but no one's come close yet. Clearly no one's solved it. So I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It seems weird that with all of the unsavory people he was associated with, that they couldn't figure out who killed him.
I know. Well.
Or why.
We're not going to make accusations and get sued. But I think those people who we talked about a minute ago almost certainly murdered him for sure. Why, we don't know. He screwed up our drug deal.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think
just because the people in that world, nobody cares.
Here's a terrifying thought this is kind of my pet theory on this. I have zero idea if it's true. It's total 100% speculation. But what if it really is gibberish? The FBI is wrong. Yeah. It's just different gibberish than he did. He's using real letters. He's using lots of letters and numbers, and it's just his gibberish. What if his drug dealer partners found that on him and thought, what are you doing? Are you taking notes? Are you pretending to be dumb and you're actually a mole, a spy, a CIA, a confidential source for the police department?
And they couldn't tell what it meant. Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know what it means. This is gibberish. Bullshit, this is gibberish. And they killed him.
Yeah.
But
then you'd think he would have been shot or something.
You would think, but maybe they're torturing him and maybe he died while they're torturing him. And it's soft tissue kind of torture.
Yeah.
And his body was so decomposed, you don't see it. So They don't, he's dead. They don't need to put a bullet in his head.
Yeah, true.
That's my theory. That's my, again, zero idea for sure. I'm not even going to propound it as if I think that's the solution. Yeah. I have no idea. It's just an interesting theory because.
But they wouldn't have left it on his body.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably true.
They would have taken it and destroyed it.
Yeah, that's all. That's true. Unless he had other pages of it. And they just weren't very thorough. In other words, they found him doing the scribbles and they ripped it out of his hands and said, what the hell is this? And he can't answer. And they torture him and they kill him. Not intentionally, maybe even. Just, you know, he just dies. He has the heart and lung issues. He could have died under what they thought wasn't that much duress.
Yeah.
And then they don't think, Jesus Christ, just go dump the body. Yeah. They don't think to look in the pockets.
I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Sense. We have, Gary's been telling you about the notes. There's two pages of these notes. And you're right. One of the top of one of the pages says the word notes, almost like it's like a hotel stationery. But they look like they're fairly decent size, normal size pages, not little baby pages. Although I don't know. I'm sure somewhere there's the detail.
It's hard to tell.
Of
what
they're, you know, 9.5 by 11 are. Are they smaller than that? I don't know. The aspect ratio looks roughly 8.5 by 11, possibly. They could be a little shorter than that. But take a look at them, solve it yourself. If you solve it, please tell us. We would love to hear it. Wouldn't you? Hopefully you can solve it before Carrie does, because she is on this.
Yeah.
And she's going to solve this probably within a couple of days, is what I think. 26 years for the FBI, 26 hours for Carrie. That's my theory. Well, that, Carrie, is the story of the Ricky McCormick murder and crypto cipher mystery.
It's almost like I've never heard this before.
Well, yeah, it was a long time ago when you heard this previously. Hopefully, you enjoyed that. Again, honestly, give us a shout. We'd love to hear of what you think about this. Contact us however you want on the usual things, socials, internet, website, email. Anything you want?
weirdworldpodcast@gmail.com.
Right on. Thanks, Carrie. Okay.
Welcome, Dean.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening. Bye.